cause public convenience, annoyance, or ire, so on.
If it's with the intent to cause public.
Intent to cause public annoyance. You wouldn't have that intent.
Annoyance, it is a comment for convenience, and there's annoyance or ire.
Yeah, but he wouldn't have the intent to cause any of those.
He's intent to keep his nose from being busted.
Sure.
Or would the actor have any intent to, all he intended to do is to bust the guy up that he was hitting?
Well, that's to cause public annoyance or alarm.
Well, it depends on the circumstance. If two guys are fighting out the back barnyard and nobody's around, you're not going to be able to show that there's any intent to cause public annoyance.
Same two guys, but if you move them in the alley, does that mean that, if you move them into the
street, right, it's building of a battery anyway.
Oh, no. Yeah, but we're not talking about battery, though.
I mean, no.
We're talking about disorderly conduct. What you're saying is you never bring it under disorderly conduct.
Well, no. I mean, if I just walk up and poke you in the nose,
yeah, you wouldn't bring it into this section?
No.
But if you wanted to stop traffic on the street while your friend tore down the draft office and you got out and hit some innocent citizen, that's a different thing.
Well, and if it was in the middle of the line going into Multnomah Stadium during a big football game, and like to stir things up, you might be able to do that.
And in a situation like that, when people are cheering at a football game or afterward, unreasonable noise would be something entirely different than it would on a quiet street.
Sure.
And jury's going to have to decide all these things anyway. How about sub 3? Any objection to that?
I might say on sub 3, Mr. Chairman, this bothers me.
Oh, we've got a hell of a graph on
We were troubled in subcommittee and on sub 3 by use of the words abusive or obscene language. And I don't know what the minutes show, but it's my recollection that we finally just said, well, we've lived with those statutes for a long time, and we're probably not going to get into all this business about prurience and so on like it would be if you're banning a book, and we'll let the jury take care of it. That was a pretty upshot.
And I think that's a good approach.
Yeah, right.
If a guy says, doggone it, the jury isn't going to, even in a... one of these outfits with a long
if a guy walks up to a single police officer, let's say, or a single citizen, and uses what many of us would call obscene language, but that's all there is to it, that isn't what we're looking for here.
We're talking about a misdemeanor anyway.
Well, and you're looking for something that's going to cause public inconvenience and so on.
How about number 4?
This one we also had some troubles with, Mr. Chairman, as I recall, because here you get into the problem of old sit-ins at meetings of the Model Citizens Board and this type of thing that's becoming more frequent. And there isn't any question that this language is somewhat of a cop-out, too, like the language in sub 3.
But he still has to have that intent to cause public convenience, annoyance, or alarm. So I don't think you even need the word unreasonably or anything else if that intent's there. How about 5? This looks reasonable.
Yeah.
Number 6.
Okay. What's a lawful order of the police to disperse?
One that they're legally authorized.
Differentiated from an unlawful order.
So, half a dozen of us are sitting around the heater in the dust depot keeping warm, and the police will come and get out of here.
Doesn't fill the first part of the section, though.
See? Intent to cause public convenience and annoyance. Is that what you're doing? You're sitting around the bus people's toes?
Yeah, it was annoying.
What was it, your intent to cause public inconvenience and annoyance?
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, there's no question of some vagueness in the language. Again, one of the purposes of this was to have a statute which will help you solve the situations before a riot or a serious situation develops in a public area by having a a lesser charge you can put against it.
Alright, now, six seems alright. Now, seven, could you rewrite that?
I noticed in Connecticut, they use the language in their breach of peace statute, which he is not licensed or privileged to do.
Mr. Chairman, I'd suggest that there could be a move by putting three of them conditions striking the rest of the sentence. In light of your beginning, the requirement of intent to cause public.
Well, a fellow who's running a rendering plant.
He's not doing it.
He knows it's a stink.
He's not doing it with that intent, though.
No, he's doing it, but he's certainly doing it with knowledge. And each morning when he starts his fires up, he's doing it with an intent not only to render that, those hides or whatever it is, but also to knowing that it's going to annoy the public.
Knowing it.
But he doesn't intend,
he might recklessly create.
Yeah.
I think maybe this Connecticut might be.
Let's listen to this Connecticut language.
They say he creates a public hazardous or physically offensive condition by any act which he is not licensed or privileged to do.
Well, I think that's an improvement over this.
Yeah.
Well, license is the solution, I guess.
Yeah, but I was going to say, legitimate purpose is going to change, because it won't be many years until rendering won't be a legitimate purpose.
That's right.
The state won't be a legitimate
purpose. But the license or privilege
that
will take care of it.
Is there a motion that we amend sub 7?
What is
a
privilege?
Privilege, I suppose, legally permitted.
Sure. Something that you don't have a right to do, but you have a privilege to do. Like grabbing an automobile.
Well, it's conduct that take your restatement into it. You see that language? Conduct that won't be visited by either civil or criminal sanction.
So it's a legitimate.
Sure.
Roger, how would that read? Read sub 7 as amended.
Well, in connection with the beginning, a person commits a crime of disorderly conduct with an intent to cause public inconvenience, annoyance, or alarm, or recklessly creating the risk thereof, he creates a public hazardous or physically offensive.
Did you say public?
They use the word public in their subsection.
Creates a public.
Public, comma, hazardous or physically offensive condition by any act which he is not licensed or privileged to do. In other words, it has to be a public condition.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you add anything by saying public. I would retain our language up to condition, creates a hazardous or physically offensive condition, without and then whatever
right or privilege,
without any license or privilege so to do.
Yeah, but you have public up there already.
Yeah.
Well, it creates a hazardous or physically offensive condition by any act which he is not licensed or privileged to do.
Now, fellas, doesn't that really sound good?
Yeah, it does.
I so moved.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to amend sub 7 as read. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Aye. How about this dandy little section as a whole?
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
May I ask one question? It says, in number 6, congregates with other persons in a public place. What would be the definition of, say, at a fire, at a private home, people begin to congregate and the police ask them to move themselves, well, they wouldn't do it.
That becomes a public place.
A public place under section 1, I think.
Because we have a separate statute preparing dispersal orders at firemen or police.
Public place means a place to which the public has access and includes, not limited to hallways, lobbies, other parts of apartment houses, so forth and so on. Highways, streets, schools, places of music, parks, playgrounds, premises used, so forth. Well, I suppose let's say they're all standing out on the lawn and crowding the problem line and thrown off.
Why don't you say highway, sidewalks, streets, schools?
Do I hear a motion to adopt it as amended? Section 4. Mm-hmm. Motion been made and seconded to adopt Section 4 as amended. Any further discussion? Not the clerk will call a roll.
Has this ever been tested?
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Sandra Burns?
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Jernstead?
Aye.
Johnson?
Bell?
Bell?
Aye.
Spaulding?
Aye.
Young?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Carry. Now, you wanted considerable discussion on Section 5, didn't you, Don?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we amend by deleting Section 5.
This is Mr. Chairman, public intoxication, and it is a public place under the influence of alcohol. Narcotics, I think, I agree that he may endanger himself or other persons of property or unknown persons in his vicinity.
Question?
Any discussion? The motion is to delete Section 5 in its entirety. Any discussion?
Yeah.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
On your, not having been lit on the entire committee, are there any other provisions for being under the influence of drugs that are medical?
Being under the influence of drugs, under the article on narcotics and dangerous drugs, it would be a crime to be under the influence of narcotic and dangerous drugs within the state of Oregon.
But presently have such a statute.
And we presently have such a statute.
And that would be retained for Oregon.
We haven't finished that.
That's
still in subcommittee.
I see. Well, this included narcotics and dangerous
drugs. Northern Public Highway, what's that today?
Got to be kicked out, because that's 160.
This is somewhat of a departure from existing law in that Section 5 would only make it a crime to be intoxicated in a public place if you endangered yourself or other persons of property or annoyed other people in the city. In other words, it would not be a crime to be drunk in a public place as long as you didn't disturb it. Mm-hmm.
You disturb
annoy anybody, and a lot of people are damn easily annoyed by a drunk smelling your breath.
Sounds a happy drunk. Yeah.
Oddly enough, I read a New York Supreme Court case on this identical statute yesterday, and they held that a man who was stone drunk, lying in the gutter, could not be found guilty under this statute.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman,
it was a subjective test just because him laying on the street happened to annoy somebody.
Done.
It's not my intent to not have this public problem taken care of. I just feel so strongly that as long as we burden, for instance, the Portland Police Department with over 60% of their arrests annually and forcing them to go through the criminal process and jamming the courts up, jamming the correctional institutions up at the local level, and wasting that amount of our criminal justice sanctioned thrust and the facilities and the people we have involved, we're not going to do anything about the other things they should be doing something about. And we're not going to get to an alternative until we dispense with the handling of criminally. I think it ought to be handled as a socio-medical problem. I think that the President's Crime Commission and their recommendation on civil detoxification makes a great deal of sense from both a social policy and from a criminal justice policy viewpoint. I therefore think that this body would be well served by deleting this section entirely.
Don, what other section would we have where somebody mentioned it over here, where there was a drunk in an automobile on the freeway?
Probable cause to arrest him for DWI.
No, the car's not moving.
Yeah, you still have probable cause.
That presently exists.
What if he isn't in the car? The car is empty and he's asleep behind it on the pavement.
You pick him up and you haul him into the civil
cost. Well, yeah, I know, but what's he doing to everyone else on the highway?
Well, I say you're never going to get one until you get rid of this law. You're going to keep handling the jails, and you're going to keep tying up police officers.
Bagel, see?
Going to court with them. Wow.
You think, Don, that in the situation that I've described, that you shouldn't do anything to that man, criminally?
No, but I'm telling you, happens a good deal already, but probably not enough, is the police will pick that guy up, they'll put him in the prowl car, and they'll run him home if he's of a certain socioeconomic class.
Well, what if he isn't?
If he isn't, he probably gets run into jail.
All right.
So I would say it's probably somewhat discriminatory on a class basis. Now,
would you just answer this now? Let's assume that this person is one in the class against which you're discriminating, the upper crust, so to speak. And here he is on the highway, and he's drunk, he's asleep behind his car. What do you think should be? Do you think that man should be subject to any type of criminal sanction?
No, probably not. However, if you want a separate statute being drunk in and about an auto, that's a separate issue, really. What I'm concerned with is just public intoxication. If you want to handle auto deals separately, that's fine. I can tell you that as a practical matter, that if a policeman now has an alternative with a drunk in a car who's turned his motor off because he knows he's too drunk, and if they have a way of either sending him home in a cab or taking him home, they'll do it that way.
Well, that's fine, but this worries me, though.
My concerns is, are we objecting to the fact that he's parked along the side of the road, or is the fact that he's drunk? It seems to me that if I pull off the side of the road and if I'm obstructing the highway, that's one thing. Let's just take it, I'm off in a park asleep. To me, to make it a crime to be drunk and asleep, or just being asleep is no crime, it begs the issue. And then we're right back saying public drunkenness.
Maybe obstructing the highway you could get him.
Well, you've been asked.
Go ahead.
I don't see where we're eliminating the section, we're eliminating the statute in this matter is going to solve the problem that exists. Don says that if we eliminate the statute, then we're going to force people to build civil detoxification centers and so forth and so on, but doesn't work that fast. There is a problem.
You're spending over half of your criminal justice dollars now for this statute.
Well, or that. And if we throw this statute out, are you going to reduce the appropriation of the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office and the Portland Police Department by 50%?
No, you won't. Appropriation.
Or anything.
But I'll tell you, you'll cost offset it, you can provide a civil remedy a lot cheaper than you can, and you can have those policemen to throw out criminal control activities.
Well, then who's...
Well, of course, it should be borne in mind that whether we vote for the motion or against it, in the city of Portland, which is where the problem which Don is referring exists in its most severe form, they still have a municipal ordinance under which they make arrests. They would, nearly as I can tell, they would continue to do the same thing.
I don't think so.
So long as there was not a suitable civil intoxication alternative, and until someone other than this group and the legislature does something about that, I don't think it's going to be there.
So TriMet can build these centers.
I'm entirely sympathetic with the purpose of Don's motion. We talked about this at some length in subcommittee. But the fact of the business is, if we delete the section, we still will not have solved the problem, or in my judgment, made any real meaningful attack upon it. I think the solution lies elsewhere. And it lies with the authorities in your cities and populous areas, which is where this
It's in the same old direction we've been going all the time, and if we stop going that direction, we'll start going some other direction more lengthy. I got appointed down to the city court down in North Michigan. Everybody gets appointed down there and defend a man who was charged with drunken public places. I used to be a great big old Negro fellow. And by the time I got down there, there were two more charges that were against him, and so I volunteered to take on the other two as long as he was consolidated. And I talked to him, and I told him, I thought this guy would stay away from Burnside, where he gets drunk. And says he's got a job out here, you go to. So the judge let him off on his own recall, cut all three. And by the time I got back to my office, they pinched him again. So I'm going to try that. If he wants a jury trial, we're going to do it in February. So I'm going to try to show us a disease or something. But that's not doing him any good. Maybe the public is good.
It's not doing
the
justice system any good either.
No. But I don't think we've got any system now.
What?
Without some statute, I don't think we have any system to handle people who get drunk and fall down on the street in front of the Hilton Hotel when people want to walk in and out of it.
No, you'll force the Board of County Commissioners of Multnomah County to open up a wing of the county hospital to handle those people. That's what you're
Who's going
to
take them there?
Who's going to take them there?
Yeah.
But probably the police will take them there. Are there brothers or sisters or a cab driver or whoever?
Cop picks up a guy for something that's not a crime. What's the cop?
We pick up people all the time under the mental health code. And if it was a danger to himself or to others, you sign a civil paper.
Without his consent or without anybody else's consent before you do it?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
I agree with Madonna 100%. This is a problem. Something has to be done. But I wonder if by chopping out this, what will happen? The police officer, perhaps in fear of false arrest by putting someone even in a hospital, may let the guy lay in the gutter. This is a problem, but it is within the purview of the committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that one way we might accommodate the opposing point of view here is, I don't know if this is constitutional, but it might be, is to provide that this section shall be operated only in those counties that do not have public detoxification centers available, or something like that. In other words,
well, let's apply it to counties over 300,000.
I've wrestled drunks enough to know that the police are going to find all. If the guy says, I'm not going to go to your goddamn civil detoxification center, and you say, okay, you're a priest for disorderly conduct because that woman over there just heard you say goddamn.
Well, that's just exactly what I was going to ask you. Would you go so far as to say that a person who is intoxicated, who's drunk, and who annoys persons,
disorderly conduct is a separate kind of activity.
All right. What happens to them when they go, when they're, what if all of these people are charged with disorderly conduct and they put them in jail?
Same thing.
Aren't you the cause that you're...
Drunkenness is not part of the disorderly conduct.
Well,
he can be guilty of disorderly conduct.
I just read here that out of the 3 million arrests made in the United States, over 1 million are disorderly conduct, are drunkenness, and that the great part of those charged with disorderly conduct, intoxication is involved.
Yeah, okay, that's probably true. However, you don't make that a part of your statute here.
Well,
that is a separate crime.
What about for annoying persons in this percentage?
Yeah, well, he could still be arrested for. I think what he's trying to say, if this man is drunk and he doesn't do anything that comes under the disorderly conduct statute, then he should escape criminal prosecution under this.
Mr. Chairman,
there may be something to that.
I have a question. I wonder, are we talking about two things now? We're talking about a statute on public intoxication, perpetuating in effect a concept that we've had. We're also talking about public detoxification centers and the chronic alcoholic. A lot of people who come before the criminal court on public intoxication charges are not chronic alcoholics and are people who wouldn't be served any great service served by sending them to the detoxification center. You get a lot of kids. I can recall growing up, you go to a dance on a Saturday night, and some of the kid would get drunk.
That director showed that I've heard about Santa Cruz.
And
I
grew up in a similar kind of town. I know what happened.
that might be some law. That's he's underage.
Yeah, all right, but maybe he's a college kid and he's 21 or 2 years old, okay. And he's old enough to drink, but he's out in this dance hall. In a public place, falling down and making a spectacle out of himself. Now,
has he hit anybody over anything?
Well, sure, arrests him and puts him in the jail all night. He sobers up, and next week he goes back to college and he's forgotten about. But are we talking about two different things?
No, I'm taking that kid into. I'm taking the homeless man. I'm taking the American Indian who's in the park. I'm taking that kid and I'm going to take him to the public health detoxification center.
Which doesn't exist.
And it won't exist.
Even
though
there's nothing there that they can do for him,
they're detoxifying.
Well, that's the same thing that they go to the jail.
Now, wait a minute. All right. If you want to begin to get to whether it does do any good or not, they have some research now out of Des Moines that shows that they have limited success by detoxification over the criminal justice sanction. That the person is drunk less often
that the periods of dryness are extended beyond what they are going to jail. And when they are on drinking sprees, they are of less intensification and less lengthy. Right? They have some good, hard statistical information to show this. They can also show that it's a cheaper way to handle it, and it relieves the police of the burden in the courts.
So why doesn't the Multnomah County Commissioners establish one of these? Why haven't they?
Get that done right now.
Well, it seems to me that while everything you say may be right, it appears to me that the better method of handling it, rather than eliminating this whole thing, because there are other areas of the state that don't have the same problems, that perhaps it would be better in our provisions with respect to sentencing or how you're going to dispose of these people, to provide that anyone who is convicted of public intoxication will be handled in this certain manner, rather than put in jail or fined or something.
The problem is, of course, that you're going to have them convicted before, and he's trying to get out of it before they go to jail, before they're arrested. You've got a different...
Well, what difference does it make? You're not talking about a great deal of time. You're talking about he's arrested today, and tomorrow morning he's convicted.
Well, President's Crime Commission cited the mockery that's made of the law, where I can't remember whether it was Chicago's jurisdiction or not, where the elapsed time the man had in court was 13 seconds or something. And how do you do that? Well, you walk 75 drunks in at one time, and you say, how do you plead guilty or not guilty? You plead guilty, I sentence you to what? And he's in bank, sentenced all these people to jail for 30 days. Now, that's the kind of thing that putting drunks in jail causes.
Do you do that in Portland?
You bet.
Almost that,
that
bad.
That you know. Would not be surprising now in our city court.
On Monday morning. Well, Don, let me ask this question. On some of the detoxification model plans, don't they employ a procedure where the police officer can admit or kind of file a petition or whatever it is? I mean, you see, most of these guys down on Burnside, the guy that's working that beat knows him intimately, probably has arrested them 50 or 100 times. So he sees this guy laying on the sidewalk, and he knows that he's an alcoholic, and there's a procedure in the law whereby he files a petition or signs a slip or something and takes him to the detoxification center. He has the discretion on the scene.
There's four or five different ways this can be handled.
Yeah. Well, now,
in Des Moines, let me consider it. In Des Moines, they have nothing to allow them to do it, except they have found that drunks are passive people. If you say, we're going to help take care of you, we're going to take you to the detox center at the hospital, they come along.
Well, why don't we wait until tomorrow and discuss this a little bit and go on to the next section?
I would like staff to have that model.
Second, and we ain't gonna do anything about it.
And how about the task force on drunkenness? Do you have that available also? President's Crime Commission?
Yes. This is the Supreme Court of the United States.
Don, we can argue. We'll argue some more about this tomorrow.
Yeah, let's
Can we take one more subsection, you think?
Sure.
Let's look at section 6.
Loitering.
How does this differ from section on loitering?
Well, this was a loitering with respect to prostitution.
Yeah.
This is a loitering with respect to schools and public places. And this is a very difficult section, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to override the chairman, but I suggest to you that this particular section, not simply because I'm not going to be here tomorrow, but this particular section is very difficult, and I honestly think the commission would do a better job on it if it started fresh in the morning.
Let's look at section 8. We ought to be able to pass that.
Let's go.
Abuse of venerated objects. All right, we're adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow. We can't go about it.
Can't do that.
Yes, sir. Oh, we sure didn't want to wait till Judge Burns comes in. Oh, won't he?
He won't be here.
Well, let's get at the Clark.
There's a chance of making it.
The Clark deletion. The matter now stands as a motion and a second to delete section 5 in its entirety.
Chairman.
Brother.
Okay.
Yes, Don.
I have here a daily arrest log for Friday, May the 2nd, 1969. This knows a Friday. It's not a Saturday, or it's not particularly emphasizing any particular time of day. And I'd like to pass it around for people to see what kind of arrest the Portland Police Department is making and what kind of things they're doing to spend their time in. It's self-explanatory, I think. Also, I have a few things I'd like to share with you. This is one of the major works on alcoholic and law enforcement, and it's from the Law Enforcement Study Center of Washington University in St. Louis, which has an alcoholic study center also where Pittman is. He's one of the President's Crime Commission consultants. And interestingly enough, they picked Portland, Oregon as one of the examples to cite. A large number of these actions involve the repeated arrest of the same men. To illustrate, let us take the case of Portland, Oregon. For 1963 and this year, there were 11,000 law violations involving drunkenness or the effects of drinking, but only around 2,000 different persons accounted for these arrests. This is available if anybody wants to look at it. It's one of the most standard works now in law enforcement on that particular subject. The President's Crime Commission, which I already mentioned, I think is the most important work done on law enforcement administration justice in the United States or any place else in history. It's published February 15, 1967. It makes a series of recommendations that I think, and the Crime Commission thought, that if they were followed, it would make a great deal of difference in whether we did have a safe and a just society. I think for the most part these have been ignored by bodies such as this and by other public policy bodies. I don't see near enough action taking place about implementation. From the task force report on drunkenness, which was one of their major task force and covered in a chapter in the Challenge of Crime and Free Society, the task force report emphasized that the special problem of public drunkenness should be approached as a medical social problem rather than a legal criminal problem. Following are the four basic recommendations listed in the President's report on drunkenness that should be implemented within the very near future. One, drunkenness should not in itself be a criminal offense. This and other criminal conduct accompanied by drunkenness should remain punishable as separate crimes. The implementation of this recommendation requires the development of adequate civil detoxification procedures. Two, communities should establish detoxification units as part of their comprehensive treatment program. Three, communities should coordinate and extend aftercare resources, including supportive residential housing. Four, research by private and governmental agencies to alcoholism, the problems of alcoholics, and the methods of treatment should be expanded. That's what they recommended we do about alcoholism. And I submit to you that nobody looked at the problem any more carefully and had the expertise and the research as did the Crime Commission. I'm going to quote just one paragraph from a speech made by Representative Edith Green of Oregon on November 27, 1968. Just last Monday morning in court here in Portland, 35 persons charged with being either drunk in a public place or drunk on the street were sentenced to a collective total of 1,510 days in jail, 4 years and 50 days. The local taxpayer is bearing the cost of this room and board in jail. There was one individual in Portland who has been arrested over 1,000 times for being drunk in public. It is estimated that he has cost the taxpayers of this county over $400,000. The revolving door can be an expensive habit for everyone. I'd like to give you another little case history about who we call Mr. Doe. It should be noted that Mr. Doe was known to other local agencies long before his initial contact with public health personnel. He was first known to the city police department in 1954 when he was arrested on a drunken vagrancy charge. From that time to the present, he has been arrested a total of 53 times for drunk or drunk-related charges alone. If Mr. Doe would have served all of the days sentenced to him, he would have spent 1,920 days, 5 years and 3 months, of the last 15 years in jail for being drunk. Considering the number of men similar to Mr. Doe in the Multnomah County area and the limited amount of jail space, some of this time was suspended and only 2 years, 3 months was actually served. According to figures presented by the Portland Police Department regarding the cost of drunk arrests, Mr. Doe has cost the Portland Police Department $22,949. This is a great deal of money, but hardly representative of the total expenditure of funds for all local agencies on Mr. Doe. And I'd like to quote from the Council on Alcoholism for the Portland Tri-County Area, the nature of Portland's alcoholism problem. Portland has experienced a great burden on police services, court time, and jail expense because of the magnitude of public drunkenness in the core of the city. Police Chief Donald McNamara reports 67% of the arrests during 1966, or 11,047 arrests, were on charges related to drunkenness. He estimates that at least one-third of his officers' time is consumed in dealing with these problems. The cost of processing one arrest in this area of public drunkenness, or one while driving under the influence of alcohol, or one drunk and disorderly, may amount to $433, as a report to Mayor Schrunk of 2/16/67. Now, I'm not proposing to you that this is a minor kind of recommendation I'm making that we delete this. It's a major policy decision. I think it's one that the body ought to make. I think that one of the most important things we agreed on from the beginning is the things we leave out of the criminal code. I've been having some contact with Representative Hugh Green. It looks like there may be some federal funds available, and Multnomah County will, within this next year, be in the alcoholic detoxification business, probably through their county hospital. The state legislature, in the last session, passed a law providing for this kind of thing, but did not fund it because of the tight money that we have in the state of Oregon. I think that the cost offset is immense, and if we can save policemen's time and criminal justice time, that will be more effective in the law enforcement area. I further think that the recommendation that the criminal law sanction should be used for serious dangerous behavior, and that one of the things we can do to make the law a more effective tool is to have it for those kind of things and have it respectable. And I don't think the law is going to be respectable as long as it continues to treat people who are obviously sick and that obviously there's no deterrent effect from the law in a criminal justice manner. I think it's time that the state of Oregon did some pioneering and deleted this section.
Don, have you made the same continued presentation to the city of Portland?
I'm the chairman of the City County Health Committee, and there are two city commissioners on that body. And I've also worked with the Portland Police Department and the Sheriff's Office over a number of years. I would say that probably the firmest advocates of this are police. The police are the quickest to jump up and aim and say, hey, it doesn't work. It's obvious we gotta try something else. We're wasting our money, we're wasting our time, and we're blundering along. They'll support this first. The City of Portland is supportive of this also. And the two other commissioners, Commissioner Grayson and Commissioner Earle, who are on the City County Health Committee, voted, and the body unanimously agreed that civil detoxification was one of the major things that the City County Health had to deal with immediately.
Have you asked them to repeal their public intoxication ordinance?
No, but I'm sure that they would.
Well, why haven't they? They've had plenty of time.
There has been no alternative so far to jailing. That's been the big problem. Now,
but what alternative is there today?
Today,
we go into this.
All right. Today, there is still no alternative to jail. And what I'm saying is there probably won't be in a lot of places until somebody does something dramatically to force them to provide alternative.
Well, we're not
now, the I last think, I think Oklahoma County is going to do it anyway.
We're not the last body or commission or legislative group that's going to act upon this. Don't you think perhaps it would be more timely when we're certain that those detoxification facilities are available?
No, I think that if we, as a matter of policy, say now that this is something that should have been corrected years ago, it continues to be a blot on our criminal justice system, it's a sham, and we want something done about it now, and we've moved to delete this, I think that'll put us on record and make people move.
Doesn't this statute go further than our prison statute with reference to drunkenness? In other words, it goes the wrong way. I'm in agreement with Park. I think this goes the wrong way. If anything, we should go the other way.
How do you mean
the wrong way?
Well, Well, this broadens the criminal sanctions to the condition of being drunk. Doesn't it?
No, I would say it narrows.
Because with this statute, Section 5 would require a degree of intoxication that would cause him to be a danger to himself or others.
Persons or property.
Or annoy to annoying persons.
Our present law is a strict liability crime. If you're intoxicated in public, you're guilty.
But you're bothering anybody or
anything. You're sitting on the street.
Somebody's annoyed,
Policeman's annoyed.
Well, I was coming out of my parking place, which is up there in that federal savings and loan a week or so ago, and I'm waiting on the corner, and an old guy fell off of the curb, and his head hit an automobile going by, and he was laying there, and his head bleeding, and the guy driving the automobile was scared to death, and I went over and made myself known that I was looking for business. Maybe it looked like that.
Robbie Cotters.
But I wanted to be sure that fellow driving that car wasn't accused of any wrongful hitting the fellow. And I didn't know what the hell to do with the guy. Of course, he was in a condition that was dangerous to himself. Somebody had to do something with him. And the policeman came over. It was the city hall right across the street. Apparently, they saw some commotion there and took him up at the county hospital, which, or at least that's where he said he was going to take him, and I assume he did. And he didn't make any arrest of that fellow and shouldn't have. But I don't know if that's material, that experience, but it's interesting. Well, yeah.
Don, the Oronoi persons in his vicinity. That portion of this is covered in disorderly conduct, isn't it?
Yeah, that.
Why wouldn't this be, if we're going to adopt it, why would it be well to delete that portion of it?
Well, the only difference is the disorderly conduct requires an intent to annoy a person in the vicinity.
Oh, I see.
That's other right. Intoxication yeah. Doesn't.
I'm not saying we should leave these guys in the street. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying we should have another way of dealing with the problem. And you know, $400,000 for one guy's drinking career, $400,000 could establish the finest alcohol detoxification center you've ever seen in your life.
I just
well, kill the guy
to bet you that your budget's
going
to
be somewhat of an expense to you if you keep him in a detoxification center. Maybe you have to get four of them, I guess, at least save you.
I've got a question.
Senator Burns.
Well, I'm in complete sympathy, Don. I think that we should go to the detoxification center, certainly in Portland and in the metropolitan area. We've got the responsibility of enacting a code for the whole state. Mm-hmm. And we know, just as well as we're sitting here, because of the distance involved, that you're never going to have a detoxification center in Jordan Valley or in Halfway or in Duper or Rufus or, and they're where you do have them are going to be so far away that it's going to be impossible for the person who's creating a hazard to himself and to society can't transport him to it. Now you say, well, you can handle that by city ordinance. Well, you get out in Eastern Oregon along these county roads, somebody's out deer hunting and he's drunk on the highway, he's not covered by a city ordinance, and an officer takes him off that highway to protect himself and other people. And if he doesn't have some authority to do that, he's going to be subjected to false.
Do they have jails in Duper or Halfway? Or
yes. Yeah.
They do?
Yeah. Yes, they
operable
do.
Operable jails?
Yes, they do. Jordan Valley also.
But no
hospitals. Well, so the point that I raised yesterday with respect to, I don't know how we can solve it. I think probably just as a matter of policy, I'm inclined to go along with you, but I don't think it's as simple as just as saying we're going to just cut it out, and then in parts of this state where when somebody who isn't an alcoholic gets bombed and he's creating the problem.
There's all kinds of tools yet to handle it.
What?
The disorderly conduct statute.
What if he isn't bothering you?
What if
he
doesn't intend to bother
you?
He
There are hospitals available for Jordan Valley.
Yeah, 103 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have any facilities for this.
It's a lot simpler to put him in the pokey for 6 or 8 hours and sober him up and then follow him.
What if he isn't an alcoholic? He's not an alcoholic at all. It's the first time it's ever happened to him, or maybe the fifth time.
Okay, maybe in Jordan Valley, the only facility you do have is the local lockup. Maybe you put him in there and you keep him narrowly sober. But you sign a little civil paper rather than going through the whole criminal process.
Well, what would you suggest that we incorporate in this code with respect to civil proceedings in those situations?
We have staff that I think can deal with that. There's a model on Alcoholism and Intoxication Treatment Act that handles this and goes into methods. There's a number of papers written on this by eminently qualified experts and legal scholars.
And you've got a lot of people that are drunk and come under this who are not alcoholics and with whom it is the disease.
I would have hated to have been run to a detox center last night.
If we outlaw this and say that the public intoxication is a crime, but we leave driving while intoxicated a crime, do we run into any problem?
I don't know why.
Wally Carson takes the case up and he says, well, look, discriminatory.
Oh, no, there's a big difference.
Sure is.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
you're a dangerous weapon when you're...
In fact, if anything, I would increase the penalties for drunken driving and I would have stringent enforcement.
I'm not riding a horse while you're drunk. That isn't...
If the horse is drunk.
A walk.
But the main reason I'm for this is... for Don's position is that as long as we continue these criminal statutes, nobody's going to do anything about it. And probably what to do about it is not within our jurisdiction if we decide we're not going to handle it criminally. Isn't that right?
Well, Bruce, I'm afraid that this thing just simply goes too far. This is a selective matter. And the problem that Don is talking about is alcoholics. Not the fellow who gets drunk once a year or something of that sort.
Even him, why should we even treat him criminally? Does it really do any good? Are you going to deter him from getting drunk once a year?
I certainly think so.
I don't think so.
Oh, I do. Bob?
How about that, Bob? You answer it.
What if he was arrested last night? Would you go have those double vodka martinis the next time you came down here?
You haven't. I would have stopped one short of work.
There you are.
There you are.
If
you had a sentence so bad that you couldn't take care of yourself, wouldn't it have been better to be taken to some kind of facility where they were detoxified?
I'd have gone right back into the bar where Mr. Pellet was still holding forth when I left and asked for some help.
I have complete sympathy with what Don is talking about, because we've heard a lot of this in committees here in the legislature, but in an area like I represent, some of the rest of you, what do you do with them? A quick alternative is, say, the hospital, and I'm just looking at the hospital administrators that suddenly they thought they had to start taking care of these. Although they could do it in time, and I am disturbed that this thing is as is in the criminal code. I think there's another place for it, but it is a big jump all at once to throw on a territory like Eastern Oregon.
What you said is very important, though, and why it's so immensely important is what we don't know what to do in this society, we make it against the law. And that's absurd. We sweep it under the rug by making it a police problem.
I agree with you. It's wrong.
The Oregon State Police or the sheriff in Baker County will tell you that it cannot be criminally treated because it doesn't do any good.
They'll also tell you that the Miranda and Esposito and the rest of those rules are absolutely great. I mean, terrible. Probably. You don't follow them on that.
I think
I don't follow them.
No, that's what I was saying.
I can sympathize with. I don't think that in the case of that, I don't think the criminal process does any good for the alcoholic. But I think the drunk poses that the drunk, whether he's an alcoholic or just a once a year newspaper editor out on the town, can pose a problem for society if for no other reason than he can extremely offensive to other people. And if we had other facilities available, or if I were to be convinced that other facilities not could be available, but would be available in the next 14 months, I could support his motion. But the facilities don't exist now, and I'm sure that Portland and Multnomah County and Marion County and the City of Salem and Lane County and the City of Eugene and so forth, they're not going to have them ready in the next 14 months, which is about the time we expect that this portion of it will be effective, 18 months at the most. If we pass this and the legislature approves it, which would be a second doubtful step in my opinion, Portland and Multnomah County would be down here for money to set up their detoxification centers. They would ask the legislature, the next step would be to ask the legislature for enough money because of this new change to set up these centers, and the legislature won't give it to them because if I read the state's financial situation correctly, why it's not willing to assume that burden, the state is not willing to assume that burden from the cities and counties in the next session. And until the facility and the funding are available, both of them, why I can't support his motion. Regardless of my belief that as far as the alcoholic, not just the ordinary drunk who is not an alcoholic, but dying his first arrest, as far as the confirmed alcoholic is concerned, why the present process doesn't accomplish anything for him. It still accomplishes, in some respects, a useful purpose for the rest of them. Chairman, I call for a question on Mr. Clark's motion.
I'm going to support Don's motion. I'm not unmindful of what Bob says, but I'm so totally convinced that what we've done a lot in Oregon is everything that bugs us would make it a crime. Whether it be the hay bale problem in Klamath County, we now have a crime that if you carry a bale of hay in your trunk and you don't have a bill of sale or a certificate of ownership or a title to a bale of hay, it's a crime. The reason we have that is because some hay dealers in Klamath County weren't good businessmen, quite frankly. And that we just got statute after statute protecting peach orchards and so on, because the guys are too lazy to protect them themselves. And
why don't you give the county the authority to pass its own ordinances so it doesn't have to come to the legislature to make it a statewide crime to haul a bale of hay in Klamath County?
Some very forward-looking counties do have that power now, Bob.
Yeah, I know.
Four forward-looking counties have that, and they've got other problems. But my concern is that we are never going to answer the problem if we keep making it a criminal problem. That's the social cop-out for failure to face up to responsibility. And we delve into this every now and then. The philosophy that let's pass a law, make it a crime so parents can point to it, or the clergy can point to it, or businessmen can point to it, is an absolute cop-out, and we're making the criminal code just nothing but the Ten Commandments for the rest of us.
If we're going to do that, then let's go back and get rid of the bad check statute.
All right.
And various right. others of these things.
All right.
Now, if we're gonna go through that and do all of these things, what chance do you think the code's gonna have of passage next year?
Don't worry about that.
Dave Frost.
Well, I think we're overlooking the fact that Don tells us about the habitual alcoholic, and that this is definitely a problem. I'd agree with him, it's definitely a sickness, and someday I hope we have enough to take care of it. Being a deterrent, I think the drunk in the public statute presently is very much a deterrent because it gives the policeman the power to say to the maybe twice a month drunk, you want to go to jail or you want to go home? You want to call a cab or you want to go home? You want me to drag you down to Second Oak or what's your choice? And he says, I'm going home, officer.
Have you ever been a policeman?
No, I never have.
Well, I'll tell you, the officer can still do that and still will do that.
Well, but Don, you said you don't arrest bank presidents yesterday. That's what you're talking about. But doesn't that the officer says to him?
To who?
To the bank president who's
sure.
bouncing off the wall.
Sure, and he can still say it. There's nothing to keep him from saying it.
Well, that's why
he can't tell him to go to jail. He says, sure he can.
Well, that's why I told the...
I have rationed hundreds of times.
I'm not going to argue with you about it, but I think that this is one where there is a possible deterrent.
The officer can still do it.
Well, why are you worried then? What are you worried about then, this being on the books?
We're not going to get changed. That's what I'm worried about. As long as you keep treating it criminally, it'll never change.
I suspect if you come down here next January and have a civil detoxification center operative in Multnomah County, financed by the city of Portland, Multnomah County, in existence at that time, the legislature will very generously make this statute not apply to counties of over 300,000 population, which I think is the usual gimmick in this state.
Yeah.
And that the minute they get one in Lane County, why they'll drop it down to counties of 150,000.
Well, not only that, the whole thing, it'll never happen in most places unless we do kick it out.
Well, Bruce, I have a question, Chairman.
Yes.
But I wanted to hear what Bruce said. That's why I wasn't, and you didn't finish when you were in response to what Dave Cross said.
Well, I was saying that the police do that, as what I said was, that's why I told the experience about the guy in the corner. The police came over and took him to the hospital, and they would do more of it if this statute wasn't the common way of handling it.
But they would do it under the Portland City Ordinance, which would continue to exist.
I don't know how I'm going to vote. This is the damnedest vote I've had to make since I've been on this whole thing. But let me ask a couple of questions. You say we can get him under the disorderly conduct statute. I'm concerned very much of the same thing that Dave Frost is concerned about. I mean, complete sympathy with this detoxification thing, and to get these people out of the criminal courts, it's ridiculous. But, so we say, as a matter of legislative declaration, that public intoxication is no longer a crime in the state of Oregon. It is not a crime, it's a civil remedy. All right, you have a guy, he's on the street, he is drunk, and he is loud, and so the officer arrests him for disorderly conduct. Can he successfully be prosecuted for disorderly conduct because of the diminished responsibility because he's drunk?
I don't think that affects that at all.
Would that be a defense?
Everything I have read says that does not affect those kind of issues at all. Now, I'm not a lawyer.
Well, how about in the light of what we've done on responsibility and in the light of the research that Don and Roger did?
I don't
he's
think that
have
would
the
be.
Yeah.
Well, he's got to have the intent, and if he's drunk, he doesn't have the intent.
Well, we've continued intoxication though, pretty much the same way as our present statute has.
Yeah, but we've got it. I mean, can I say one thing?
Just
that's not diminished responsibility.
I just want to say one thing. I have sympathy with Don's problem, but I think the motion would also exclude narcotics and dangerous drugs.
Cover it in other places.
Cover it in other places?
Yeah, it is already covered in other places.
Well, this provides your motion would eliminate the intoxicator under the influence of narcotics or dangerous drugs. Is it covered so much?
Yes, it is.
Where?
Specifically.
It is presently a crime to be under the influence of a narcotic.
Why do we have it in here then?
And that would change.
Why do we put it in here?
I suppose it's just a lesser included crime. It's going to be a felony, and it is presently in Oregon. You either use a narcotic or dangerous drug in Oregon, or to be under the influence of a narcotic or dangerous drug.
No, it's not a felony.
Is it a
not to be, not to use, to possess, but not to use?
Yeah,
how
yes. To use within the state of Oregon.
Well,
not to be addicted to.
You can't give the DA a chance to charge him.
Yeah, right.
On this question here, it seems to me that the deletion of this as a crime and the setting up of the other procedures in the intoxication center have all got to be part of one package. And I don't see how this commission here has authority to tell the legislature and the cities that we are now going to say that you're going to have to spend X number of thousands of dollars to take care of this problem.
I cannot even say that.
And, as far as I'm concerned, it's all got to go together. And here in this commission, we're not going to be able to set up these detoxification centers. That's not part of what we're doing, and so therefore I don't see how we can delete this.
We
got to
have the
answer.
We're
taking
that out of our
history. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman,
no, they got
to
come together.
Ken?
I'd like to ask Don a question. Wouldn't, I think there could be some money saved, but my personal opinion, maybe you can convince me differently, is that there wouldn't be an awful lot saved because somebody's going to have to be doing the same things anyway. Somebody's going to have to be picking them up. Somebody's going to have to be taking them to your doctor.
It's going to be a lot more expensive, as a matter of fact.
And some of this may cost more than the jail facility.
Yeah, there are some research and studies done on this. One of them was done in San Joaquin County, California. And it shows on a cost accounting basis, there's just no question about it, that we can treat it cheaper with the civil remedy. And there's no question about it that it could be more effective. Now, I'm not saying that we're going to solve the whole drunken problem, because we don't. Nobody knows how to cure drunkenness. But the research indicates that by treating it in the social medical model, that they are going to less off and you have limited successes. You have longer periods of sobriety. People can maintain jobs and not maintaining jobs. There's a lot of social consequences, too, that have been shown to be the practical outcome of this. So as far as cost offset, I don't think there's any question about it. It would pay for itself very easily.
Don, would you be willing for the next year for the county to say to you, well, we're going to reduce your budget $200,000 because this has been deleted?
Now, what was this, Ken?
Would you would you consent to have your own budget cut $200,000 next year because of the deletion of this?
County's budget.
Yes.
Law enforcement.
Your department.
Oh, I don't have
not his department anymore.
Well, that's right, it isn't. But do you think that it'd be fair for the sheriff's department to?
If it's taken.
It was the city police department? City police department? Yeah, I'd say yeah, easy.
Half the city police budget?
Half the city
police. Well, you said it's about half their activity.
Well, so more than that, it's two-thirds of their activity.
Would you be willing to?
No, because some of it would still be involved. They would still be taking the person from the point
they
of...
They were taking him to a different place is all.
Don, I'll bet you dollars to donuts that that budget wouldn't be cut one red penny.
I don't think it should be.
Well, you just said a moment ago, yes, easy. $200,000.
I said I would be willing to do that. I don't think we have too many police now. I think we have too many things we have the police doing. I think we have all kinds of things that they could be doing if they didn't have these kind of tasks to perform. Going to court and eating that kind of clogging. I think we can probably get by without establishing two or three more municipal courts. I can probably get by without increasing the size of the city attorney's office or the district attorney's office. I mean, get by without creating an additional district court in Multnomah County.
How much does it cost you to run the county hospital per patient per day now?
Well, what?
The, I don't know, but the costs are different. They're different costs. Entirely.
Well, they're all dollars. I mean, they're money. The bank asks you for the, in the same connection.
No, they're different programs.
Well, yeah, sure, but it all comes down to dollars that are going to be raised from people who pay taxes.
Yeah, but
now, I wished I could have. It's my fault because I should have seen that this thing was coming up. I could have brought you down testimony of MDs, hospital administrators. I could have had people lined up out in the hall down here about this. I could have had cost accountants.
But I suspect it costs you five times as much per patient per day to run the county hospitals as it does to run the county jail.
Depends on who you're.
I suppose.
Your patient.
I suppose you're right.
I wonder, in any case,
Mr. Chairman, can we strike a middle ground? I think everybody is in sympathy with the deletion of this. I asked Don yesterday if in St. Louis or some of these places they didn't have a procedure written into the statute where which required that the person be taken to a detoxification center if arrest of the detoxification if one were available and otherwise have the general provisions of the similar to the public intoxication statute. You said there were several different approaches to it.
Almost every place has a different approach.
Could we rewrite the statute to provide that a person who is intoxicated in public give the officer the right to arrest him and require the officer to take him to a detoxification center if there is one available
otherwise have it handled as a criminal offense. Now, that's not a sufficient middle ground. I suppose there's a constitutional.
You might have an equal protection problem here.
Yeah. Roger, did you have something to say?
Well, since I drafted this and put it in this article, I considered at the time of leaving it out because I felt that most of the conduct that would fall under Section 5 would fall under Section 4. In other words, it would be also be disorderly conduct. One problem you have there is that the penalty for disorderly conduct would probably be more severe than public intoxication, so that insofar as the alcoholic is concerned, you're exposing him to probably a stiffer criminal penalty than he would be if he were just arrested for public intoxication. But the reason I included it, the answer is really given in the Powell versus Texas case, which was admittedly a closed case, 5-4. But the majority agreed with everything Mr. Clark has said, but concluded that, however, facilities for the attempted treatment of indigent alcoholics are woefully lacking throughout the country. It would be tragic to return large numbers of helpless, sometimes dangerous, and frequently unsanitary inebriates to the streets of our cities without even the opportunity to sober up adequately with such a brief jail term provides. Presumably no state or city will tolerate such a state of affairs. Yet the medical profession cannot and does not tell us with any assurance that even if the buildings, equipment, and trained personnel were made available, it could provide anything more than slightly higher class jails for our indigent habitual inebriates. Faced with this unpleasant reality, we are unable to assert that the use of the criminal process as a means of dealing with the public aspects of problem drinking can never be defended as rational. The picture of the penniless drunk propelled aimlessly and endlessly through the law's revolving door of arrest, incarceration, release, and rearrest is not a pretty one. But before we condemn the present practice across the board, perhaps we ought to be able to point to some clear promise of a better world for these unfortunate people. Unfortunately, no such promise has yet been forthcoming.
It's about time Oregon had one.
Are we ready to vote on this?
Yes.
Question? I'm going to call for the question. Call the roll on the motion to delete Section 5.
Sander Boone.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Chandler.
No.
Clark.
Aye.
Frost.
No.
Drinstead.
No.
Knight.
No.
Spaulding.
Aye.
Young.
No.
Mr. Chairman.
No. Motion is defeated.
What was it? Tell us.
6-4.
Well, at least the very minutes of this meeting will be considerable aid to you in the future, and as I say, everyone agrees with the problem, and I think that Texas versus Howell pretty well states the position. Is there a motion to adopt Section 5?
So moved. I so move.
Moved and seconded that Section 5 be adopted. Call the roll.
Senator
Boone.
Aye.
Carson.
No.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
No.
Frost.
Aye.
Drinstead.
Aye.
Knight.
Aye.
Spaulding.
No.
Young.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Aye. Harry. Lawyering, Section 6. Roger, what about the constitutionality of Section 6? What's justifiable or what the apparent reason is?
Okay, Section 6, loitering, and this is an extremely difficult area, particularly when you're trying to draft a constitutional statute. Subsection 1 restates existing law and really isn't any big problem area. This type of language has been challenged a number of times throughout the United States. As far as I can find, there's never been no one. A person commits a crime with loitering if he loiters or remains in or near a school building or grounds, not having any reason or relationship involving custody of or responsibility for a student, and not having written permission from anyone authorized to grant the same. Subsection 2 is the problem there. A person commits a crime of loitering if he loiters or prowls in a public place without apparent reason and under circumstances which warrant justifiable alarm for the safety of persons or property in the vicinity, and, upon inquiry by a peace officer, refuses to identify himself and give a reasonably credible account of his presence and purpose. Now that subsection 2 covers what has generally been covered in vagrancy statutes in this state throughout the United States, most of which in the last few years have been found to be unconstitutional. One of the key points in this statute is this, the account, to give a reasonably credible account of himself.
What's a reasonably credible account?
Well, it's a subjective test to the police officer on the beat, but that has been construed to mean that a failure to give an account is not grounds for arrest. It's just one
of the refusal to?
Or the refusal to give an account. It's just one of the facts the officer can take into consideration. The key circumstance is that which warrants justifiable alarm for the safety of persons or property in the vicinity. And as far as giving an account, a credible account, or refusing to give you any account at all, it's just one of the factors that the officer can take into consideration.
Pretty subjective tests all the way around, then, aren't they?
Yeah.
But the thing of it is, when an officer is out there and got somebody prowling around the building in a high burglary area, everything is pretty subjective as far as what he's
We felt that this is an area where law enforcement needs a statute of some kind to meet the problems of the prowlers and whatnot. The difficulty, obviously, is to define it narrowly enough so that you're constitutional, but still broad enough that it's of any value to the cop on the beat. Now, we've used in this model penal code language. We haven't taken their draft verbatim, but this test is a model penal code test. Now, we don't know, frankly, whether this will stand up in court or not. Now, this the case of the Portland versus James, in which the Portland municipal ordinance was declared unconstitutional, had some language in it which gave us at least some glimmer of hope that the Oregon Supreme Court might look favorably upon this type of statute. And that language is quoted on page 41 of your draft. The third paragraph says, "It is not our intention to say that the police may not stop and question persons who arouse a reasonable suspicion that they are connected with criminal activity, nor do we express any opinion as to the validity of an ordinance cast in language similar to that used in the Model Penal Code, permitting under proper safeguards the arrest of persons who loiter or prowl under circumstances creating a justifiable alarm for the safety of persons or property." And we've looked high and low. I know Roger spent a great deal of time checking other states and what some other jurisdictions are attempting to do. And the subcommittee, I think, felt that this was about as, and I'm talking about subsection 2 now, section 7, it's about as close as we can come, at least based on the information we have, that it was about as close as we can come to meeting these two objectives, constitutionality, hopefully constitutionality, and still affinity that the average policeman can do.
This is a state vague charge, isn't it? The section 2 and section 1 is a...
Not exactly. I mean, we're not...
It'll take the place of...
We're not prohibiting indigents from being on the street or...
No, but it'll take the place of what would be a state vague charge. We're not going to have it, are we?
Well, this takes picks up 166060, part of it anyway, the bag.
Yeah. The thing that bothers me about the section, the real problem, is the school business.
Oh, that's rather me, though.
It's a real problem to school people and to students and to other people and certain types of people who. There are more types of people that are problems around schools now than were problems a few years ago. A few years ago, it was the dirty old man almost solely. And now there are lots of mental problems. Some reported schools, kids set upon by non-students on the way home and so forth.
Yeah.
How? Who can give authority to grant the same? Who has authority? Who has permission? Who can give written permission to be near a school building?
Well, a school administrator, presumably. That's what
and if I'm standing out in the street in front of the school, the school administrator can give me permission to stand on that street.
Chairman, this has the shades of 1880, which is a rather infamous bill that several of us had the opportunity to work on. And buried in this problem are so many subtleties that came out. What comes to the school, private school or public school? Presumably only public school. Does this extend to the campus as opposed to a grade school? Are we talking here about that means? Do you have to get the university's president's written permission, or is a janitor authorized to give the written permission? Does that mean a taxpayer can't go on public property without the permission of the university president? Perhaps these are examples, but these are the things that we were writing on with.
The tool for the chancellor to use with the Ways and Means Committee.
Sure would. Just not give them written permission.
Or the demonstrators.
Let them bring their, or demonstrators, or football fans, or When you start prohibiting people from coming onto public property, unless they got a note from home, or hear a note from the janitor, maybe this is one of those rare birds that will never be used unless we got the SDS trying to organize Bush Elementary School and pass out leaflets.
This will start to be used just as soon as it can.
Right.
With the pusher standing around Lincoln High in Portland and this type of thing across the street and wait. This will be used, I suspect, by the business.
Yeah, I suspect it will be used a lot more around public schools. We think of them, grades 1 through 12, than it will around the universities. I just bothered about, remain in or near a school building.
No,
certainly it can be used pretty widely, and I don't know who's got the authority to let me be on the school in front of the school.
Or I also point out that's in the conjunctive, which means not only you have to have a reason and a relationship, but you also must have written permission.
Now, our present statute, our bank statute, this is a subsection of that, 166060 provides, any person who is not enrolled as a student or who is not employed by the public or private school, and who without a lawful purpose, therefore, willfully loiters about any public or private school building or the public premises, adjacent there too. This is one of the ways of committing vagrancy. And this statute is used now. It's presently being used. Not only
all you have to do then is to stand in front of the street and make a speech.
But
the First Amendment would protect you from being arrested under the vagrancy statute.
Now, Judge Burns, the chairman of the subcommittee that considers this, had some contact with Robert Blanchard, who's the attorney for the court.
He's one of the guys that exposed himself.
And not Blanchard, excuse me. Bob Richards. He talked to him, Judge Burns asked me if I would write to Robert Blanchard, who's the superintendent of public schools. And last October, I did write him a letter. And I think for the record, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to read this into the record.
Fine.
This is dated October 29, 1969. Mr. Robert W. Blanchard, superintendent of public schools, 631 Northeast Franklin Street, Portland, Oregon. Dear Mr. Blanchard. A subcommittee of the Criminal Law Revision Commission is presently examining the laws relating to riot, disorderly conduct, loitering, and related offenses, and is studying a draft statute that proposes certain changes in this area. J. Judge James Burns, subcommittee chairman, recently talked with Mr. Ron Ridgely about obtaining the opinions of school administrators regarding Section 6 of the draft, which contains provisions relating to the loitering in or about school buildings. Mr. Ridgely suggested that we contact your office regarding the matter. Accordingly, I am sending under separate cover three copies of our draft and direct your attention to pages 34 to 45, which set out our proposal along with commentary and copies of similar proposals of other states. The subcommittee tentatively decided at a meeting on October 24 to delete subsection 2, our original, and to amend subsection 1 of section 6 to read as follows. Quote, loiters or remains in or near a school building or grounds not having any reason or relationship involving custody of or responsibility for a pupil or other specific legitimate reason for being there and not having written permission from the school administrator. This language is almost identical to that found in section 5540 of the Michigan Revised Criminal Code. The commission would be deeply grateful if you and some of your school administrators would evaluate this proposal with the following questions in mind. One, do you think that the proposal is adequate to deal with the problem of school loiterers? Two, do you have any special problem with persons who loiter a short distance off the school grounds proper? And if so, do you think the statute needs to be more specific with respect to proximity to the school or grounds in which loitering should be prohibited? Three, do you think the proposed language would be more effective than the present statute, ORS 166060 sub E? Or do you have any other suggestions or recommendations for strengthening the law in this area? Very truly. And he wrote back on November 7th, Dear Mr. Follett, I appreciate the opportunity to have staff members review your proposed legislation directed at dealing with the problems of loiterers around school. In recent years, the greatest distress caused by loiterers is the threat of riot and violence. In addition, carloads of non-school youth antagonize and harass school students as well as adults entering and leaving school buildings in ways that create tensions and distress within the school. We have a concern about the language in the proposed statute because hangers-on of the kind mentioned above almost always claim to have a legitimate purpose, such as waiting for a brother, sister, or friend to meet them during a noon hour or after school. Often these loiterers have acquaintanceship with students at school and use this acquaintance as a reason for being there. Disproving their reason is often difficult, if not impossible, because the lawyer will have a cohort in school primed to testify that he had an appointment to meet the lawyer. In answer to your second question, a loitering ordinance to be effective would necessitate that the loiterers not be able to remain within sight of the school or school grounds. A carload of youth inside of the school often draws other problem youth out of school to contribute to the problem. Another kind of loiterer is the person who may be providing narcotics or marijuana to students. He will loiter in the park area or some other place not too distant from the school where he can meet students in a secluded setting. Whether the proposed language would be more effective than the present statute's language is questionable. At present, it is our understanding that the loitering law is ineffective because a person may be apprehended only if he has no legitimate reason, as quote unquote, for being there, and nearly everyone seems able to provide some kind of reason that might be difficult to disprove as legitimate. The new language still permits a person to loiter if he can prove a quote legitimate reason, unquote. Many discussions have been held with our school principals as well as with law enforcement officers and attorneys concerning the problems resulting from having no effective loitering law. I am not sure how such a law would be constitutional, that would be constitutional, should be rewritten. But it seems unreasonable that it is possible for people with no good purpose to loiter near school, promote unrest to students by assault, or to the school by potential riot. Last year and this fall, there have been several instances in which groups of non-school people assembled near schools and threatened the security of other students, and nothing could be done unless an actual assault occurred. We are very concerned with this matter and appreciate any assistance that can be provided. We will continue to review the materials and will send other reactions as they develop. The work your committee is doing is most worthwhile. Sincerely, Robert W. Blanchard, Superintendent of Schools. He didn't really answer your question.
No.
I just to comment on that, had a chance with 20 so-called business leaders from Portland to spend about
alumni of the University of Oregon, who spent about 2 hours with Dr. Clark, who's the new president of the University of Oregon, and become pretty well acquainted with him, talking about these people, like Garnet Cannon, and that were concerned about the future of the University of Oregon. They wanted to know what the new president was going to do. And then about a week after that, I went to Phoenix to this witchy conference on campus disorder, where Dr. Clark was one of the featured speakers. He said that at San Jose State, the single biggest tool that he got to control the campus situation there came out of Governor Reagan's law enforcement package. It was passed by the legislature, which made it a crime for a suspended student to loiter in or near school grounds. He said that they had a lot of half-time, part-time, a lot of students who were part-time agitators, that they made the mistake of busting out of school, and when they kicked them out, they remained around the campus and became full-time agitators, and there wasn't anything they could do. So finally, the California legislature made it a crime for a student who was suspended to loiter or to come back onto the campus. And when that was passed, the state police and city police were able to go in and arrest those people, take them off the campus, and he said immediately their problems in San Jose State stopped. And he's by no means a hard-nosed, law enforcement-oriented type of school administrator, but very much a liberal, I think. But in any event, what he personally told me and these others seems to go in line with what Dr. Blanchard was saying in response to Don, and I've got to defer to these people that have the experience.
I think the problem with how we handle it constitutionally is the headache.
Do you think that this is written here would pass a constitutional test?
Well, I had several questions for several of these phrases. The word circle, ask Bruce to come down. What's the apparent reason? What's justifiable alarm? What's reasonably defendable? Aren't those kind of vague terms? I think it's highly doubtful if they pass the constitutional test.
Aside from that, Don Clark, what would you think of this type of a statute?
What would I think about it?
You think it's a good idea to have it?
I think it's a very useful tool for the police to have.
Yeah.
I would hope they would apply it with great discretion, but I think it would be a very useful tool to have.
What happens is they apply it.
They go all same.
Well, I would move to strike the near in sub 1 and insert the words with inside of.
That's a problem. You can see Ainsworth School from the airport. On a clear day.
You don't have very many.
I was going to say, that's, the problem's almost gone now, Bruce. I don't have a clear day.
You ought to see the lamp
from here. From my head.
Mr. Chairman, could I? The language bothers me a little on one. You can read this. I think, at least it appears to me, that you remain in a school not having any reason or relationship. I know those are in the disjunctive, but it seems to me that. You could stretch that language to mean that you were there on a legitimate purpose. You had a local meeting of the National Guard in the basement of the schoolhouse. You're in a school not having any reason or relationship with a student. I just wonder if maybe the language shouldn't be clearer that if you are there for a reason, a legitimate reason. I can be there for illegal or proper reason. Is that correct under this?
Would, as long as you have written permission.
Yeah, you have to have written permission in any event under sub 1.
So Tom's a lawyer from the Baker School District. He goes up to high school to talk to the principal about a lawsuit. He doesn't have a note saying you can come. You can come, Mr. Young.
But I don't have a correction.
So that's what puts you...
On page 50 of the Connecticut code, they use the language, or any other license or privilege to be there, rather than using the written permission from the school.
Well, that seems a lot better to me.
It's more practical, but...
It doesn't give them the control. It doesn't give those administrators the control over the kids. And after all, they're not going to arrest you. And if you're a lawyer and you're there in their school grounds, they're not going to arrest you anyway. You know that.
They're going to continue to let me pick up my grandson.
Well, really,
you haven't been to Baker recently.
You have more faith than
you do.
You
haven't
been
to
Baker.
But it does give the administrator, as far as these hangers-on and the kids loitering and the ones that are just tooling around out there, if they don't have written permission, then he's got authority to order them off. And if they don't leave, he can have them arrested. This was language I think we finally settled on from the New York penal code.
We make it apply to people under the age of 18.
But we were.
Well, how does a person get authority to grant written permission? Would a parent have authority to grant permission to somebody to go up and wait outside the school for their child?
I don't think so, and I think what we had in mind was leaving that up to the individual school administrator with respect to who's going to be able to grant permission, whether it's the vice principal or the dean of students or whoever it happens to be.
But that refers to authorized by the school authority, not by somebody like a parent of
the
child.
Right, that's what we had in mind, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You'll note on page 49, the Michigan code, rather than using the language permission from anyone, all guys grant the same, they say written permission from the school administrator.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think maybe that ought to be spelled out because you say who had.
Mr. Chairman, page 8 of today's Oregonian is a story about the Roosevelt High School problems with this last week. Principal says one of the real problems in handling the situation has been unable to get the city council to move towards creating an effective anti-learning delivery ordinance. Is this going to be effective enough to...
Well, relevant.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just irrelevant.
But this lawyer's remains in or near. Not having reason or relationship involving the custody or responsibility for a student. His mother sends the child out to wait the 18-year-old to pick up the 3-year-old. In that case, certainly that mother should be authorized to grant that, so I don't think it should be restricted to a school administrator.
He wouldn't need written permission
because that person would have a reason or relationship involving custody.
It's in conjunction.
And we can't afford to require both.
We didn't like to, but we did. Probably found this, and we spent an awful lot of time on these words and a few others in the same